Hello, Channel Pros. I am just back from our first Beyond Trust Go Beyond. That's our annual customer and partner event. This one was in Napa, California. In a few weeks, I'll be attending Go Beyond London, followed by our partner advisory board. Partners are a huge theme throughout the event, including handing out awards to our top partners. But even with all this buzz and excitement, I'm still looking for ways to drive even greater partner engagement. How can you get your sellers more engaged? How can you get your product team to build more partner-friendly products? How can you get even more integrated partner marketing? Those are the questions we're going to answer today. Welcome to the Channel Journeys podcast. I am Rob Spee, your cycling, sailing, and partner ecosystem fanatic, and your host of Channel Journeys. I'm deep into my training for the MRF Challenge on Memorial Day. How about you? Are you training for any big events? It's great to have a goal to work towards. Today's guest has been working towards a goal of being a channel-first organization, and he's making huge progress. Sam Vollm is the Senior Director of U.S. Channel Sales at AvePoint. I first met Sam on the In Partner Advisory Board, where he shared some really cool things that he's doing to drive and track their channel transformation. On today's podcast, Sam shares what they're doing as a partner organization and as a company overall to accelerate that transformation. And you're going to learn new ways to measure the ROI, the return on your channel investments. Before we get to Sam, I'm going to give a shout out to In Partner, the sponsor of Channel Journeys. Building a partner ecosystem requires a powerful partner management solution. And with a global user base of over 4 million partners, InPartner is recognized as the global leading provider of partner management technologies. Their platform offers powerful capabilities like program compliance tracking, customizable partner journeys, and business planning, enabling partner teams like yours to quickly move from program design to maximum time to value. They're constantly innovating and launching new modules to help you engage and enable your partner ecosystem. All right, are you ready for a full deep dive into channel transformation insights that could really redefine your path? Let's go.
Welcome to Channel Journeys, the podcast for channel professionals that will enable and inspire you to create your best channel journey ever. Meet and learn from channel experts who share authentic stories of their channel victories, defeats, and lessons learned along the way. Here's your host, Rob Spee, a channel chief on a never-ending quest for channel knowledge and adventure.
Hey, Sam, good afternoon. Welcome to the Channel Journeys podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, glad we got it to work out. Been wanting to chat with you. And so lots to talk about. We were just chatting about advisory boards. You and I sit on a customer advisory board. That's how we met. And it's been great getting to know you. And you guys are doing some really cool stuff that I heard about, some of the things you've been sharing on that advisory board. So we can dig into some of that. But maybe first we just start out. Well, first, where are you hunkered down, Sam? Where are you located?
Yeah, so I'm in Northern Virginia. If anyone's familiar with the Virginia wine country, I live in Loudoun County. So I work with AvePoint, and our public sector headquarters, which is my closest office, is based in Arlington. So that's where I'm kind of relative to.
Well, if it's wine country, it's got to be a good place.
That's why I live closer to wine country and not to Arlington now.
I like that. So maybe we start just AvePoint. Tell us what AvePoint does. What do you guys providing for customers out there?
Yeah. Our big story is collaborating with confidence, right? So everyone's familiar with kind of the security space when it comes to, you know, obviously physical security, your network security. But when it comes to the conversation around like, hey, the individual teams chat, how information is stored in SharePoint, those kind of pieces, we call that, you know, the collaboration data that kind of gets flung back and forth really quickly. So we help migrate content into places like M365 in a full fidelity fashion. We help back up that content to make sure if it's ever lost or destroyed, you can go ahead and recover it in the event of something like ransomware as well. And then, of course, the protection piece. So as that content is moving back and forth, ensuring that it is tagged appropriately, that it's archived when it's no longer necessary, and making sure that any systems, let's go ahead and say like your search systems or even think coming out like Copilot, as they're trying to look at your total available data pool, it's only pulling from the most relevant and the correct permission type of data that you can have access to as well.
Are customers using this, purchasing it directly from AvePoint, or is it 100% through the channel?
So we are going through that fancy old channel transformation term. Right now, we're at about a 50-50 split. And that's up quite a bit over the past 2 or 3 years. So we launched our partner program, I believe it was 2 years ago officially. And we were, you know, in the kind of mid 20 range, and about 2 years in now, we're just broke over 50% this year. So we're quickly becoming a channel first organization.
Nice. And is MSP the predominant channel for you?
Yeah. So MSP is our primary focus for the persona that we sell to in the channel. You know, of course, not including things like fulfillment, the main distributors, like we have a public sector arm. You have to have, you know, your kind of vehicles for the government. But when it comes to our partner persona, yes, the MSP is our primary. We also work with VARs and SIs as well to kind of meet those more niche customer needs.
Yeah, very good. And what is your role there, Sam? Explain what you do.
So I am the senior director of U.S. channel sales. So I run a team that focuses on the sales of our solutions directly to MSPs. I also manage a team that focuses on that VAR SI persona as well. So really anything that involves partners in the U.S., it comes to me and my team. We make sure partners are taken care of.
Very good. You know, Sam, hearing you and what you share on the advisory board, you're someone who has a very forward-thinking mindset, I think, and always pushing the envelope of what you can do and leveraging technology, leveraging partnerships, which I found fascinating and encouraging too. What does your ecosystem look like now versus when you first joined? You've got to come a long ways, you know, in growing that channel participation.
Yeah. So from a partner ecosystem perspective, when we were just starting out, it was very opportunistic on the managed service provider side. Step number one, you have to be able to establish your routes to market, right? So by virtue of us working with distributors like Ingram Micro, TD Synnex, Arrow, D&H, that allowed our ecosystem to get very wide on the MSP piece, because you can just go to one of these cloud marketplaces and have access to our technology, frankly, without talking to anybody at that point, which is kind of like the dream of a channel. So that allowed us to really identify the need for like, hey, a lot of the folks coming to these marketplaces is that MSP persona. And that actually shifted how we do product development to developing a overarching solution for the MSPs to kind of have a single pane of glass to see all their customers underneath. Even the ability to do things like manage your customers' licenses within our that overarching solution as well. That all really came from seeing more and more of that MSP persona in our ecosystem. And then, of course, you're always going to have some of the larger systems integrators as they're kind of working through customer needs, especially as they get more and more niche. We're primarily an M365 partner ourselves. And, you know, anyone will say, you know, Microsoft makes the best 80% solutions out there. That's why they have such a strong partner ecosystem. So for those VARs and those SIs that are looking to kind of add on to that Microsoft story, we really become complementary in a number of different areas too. So we really focus on serving those two folks' need. And that's why we have a dedicated team to serve both those unique personas.
I wanted to explore with you all the different components of how you're able to make this shift. You know, you've gone from 20% to 50% channel. Looks like you're that's just going to keep growing and growing. So the product component of it, you mentioned that. That was a pretty important piece for you, was the changes in the product itself.
Yeah. Well, and it's always a fun one of those things. It's always like, it's a good and bad thing. I feel like anything in business, it's a good and bad thing, pros and cons. Maybe that's like the optimist in all of us. That's why we're in sales. So the thing that we quickly realized is that we were late to the game, for the audio listeners, I'm doing air quotes, right? Because many of our competitors in the space who may have been, by virtue of revenue size, much smaller than us, they may have sold exclusively in the channel from the beginning, or they may have adopted the channel way of selling years and years ago. So there's certain just institutional ways of being able to buy things they were used to, right? So when we came into the market, we were primarily a direct sales organization, and we didn't have necessarily all the mechanisms in place to emulate the people that we will be replacing for some of our MSP partners. So that was a big shift for us, which is why we made a lot of technology investments to making sure we can match and exceed some of those best practices. The reason I say it's also a good thing is because we were able to get a clear expectation from those partners like, hey, I need you all to have these six things and I will move my business over to you. This is how it works correctly. So we didn't have to make it up. We could just ask, and the market knew to be able to respond with exactly what we needed. So that made it really easy for us to kind of make that shift. And we have a very strong development. I can't say enough, you know, at the end of the day, you have to have that development muscle extremely strong and toned to be able to make these kind of shifts in real time for the market. Because for some of the things we did, we fully recognize that, you know, it might take another organization 4 or 5 years to even create a solution like that umbrella tool I'm talking about for MSPs, when we were able to spin that up, you know, in a matter of a couple months. So that really helped us get prepared for entering this kind of new way of selling.
How did you get support of product to make that investment? Because that's always, you know, everything's a trade-off of where are we going to invest? Are we going to invest, you know, build new products, enhance the products we have, adapt our products for MSPs? How did you get that support?
So our founders, or one of our founders, I should say, was a developer by trade. So you kind of have that R&D muscle, always thinking of new things. So because we were, like I said, focused on that direct business sale, we were moving more into the higher mid-market enterprise level of selling. We did have a mid-market and SMB arm, but it really wasn't as robust as our kind of, we call it a corporate enterprise level of selling. So it started off with, you know, as most kind of startups do, and we have that arm of ourselves as well, where our founders said, hey, we recognize there's an opportunity kind of in this SMB space, figure out a way to service these customers. That's a big opportunity for us. And we knew it was a big opportunity for us because Microsoft is kind of reshifting some of their business to make it more accessible and make themselves more accessible and partners that service that space, encouraging them to work with that as well. So the market was telling us to move that direction from some of our biggest partnerships like Microsoft. And our founders also were willing to let folks explore. But with that being said, you have to prove it. When I talk about a 20 to 50% change in channel, right? We got started with this story back in like 2015. So it took years for us to build that foundation, right? Getting established with the distributors, getting that technology, making those shifts until we were about to go public a few years ago. And that's where we were like, we're actually going to make this a core piece of our story to then launch our first official global partner program, which I had the pleasure of being on. And that's when we saw kind of that rocket ship up. So really it's that buy-in, having that R&D muscle, and then kind of proving it out first, and then finally making the decision that we're going to, you know, hit go. And that's where you see that adjustment.
Yeah. Well, and that's a good point too. This isn't an overnight success, and channels is not an overnight business, right? This is a long play.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got to be willing to invest in it. So your prior role, did you say you were actually running partner programs? Did you run the program before?
Yes. So just to kind of give you the full brief history. So I started off at AvePoint. I've been with the company about 10 years now, a little over 10 years. And I started off as an engineer. I moved to our services side. I then managed our engineering team in public sector here in Arlington for roughly 3 years. And then as I was managing the engineering team, we would have these partners. Because being in public sector, virtually everything, you got to work with a partner. Whether it's your 8A, whether it's GSA, right? There's a partner involved somehow. So we had a partner director at the time that was just sort of someone we brought on that had relationships. And he was like, hey, I'm going to bring these partners in every Thursday and I want the engineering team to train them. My engineering team was paid on closed won business in our CRM system. So I'm not going to have them do it. So I did it. I did the trainings every Thursday and I was training these folks on our technology, all the different solutions. And at some point I realized, I was like, these engineers from these partners can speak to our solutions, frankly, just as well as our folks. So I convinced our VP of sales at the time and my boss, who was the CTO, to kind of carve out what we call the partner enablement program manager to actually prove that we could get net new business from partners. Had a great success, you know, doubled the initial quota that we had put on ourselves for the first year. And then we were about to go public, as I mentioned. We brought on a senior vice president of channel. He really brought a lot of previous experience from Ingram Micro and Palo Alto. And because I was based in the US and I was proving, you know, that we could source business here, and I had also worked in services and also worked in engineering, I was kind of teed up to be in someone he selected as the global partner program manager. So with kind of his guidance and my empirical knowledge of AvePoint, I wrote everything from our deal registration system to our program terms and conditions, designed our click-through system, set up our PRM system as well. And that's what really gave me a lot of the foundation and knowledge that I have in the space. And then eventually, obviously, transitioning to my current role running US channel sales.
Yeah, that's really an interesting progression from engineer all the way up to where you are now. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's kind of befitting. One of the things that's kind of been instilled in me is partnerships are frankly about winning the hearts and minds of the engineers. So being able to empathize with the things that those folks really care about, because at the end of the day, I always say that, you know, the sales team, our job is to get the conversation started. The engineer is really the ones kind of making the connections on problem to solution. So if you're out in the field as an engineer and you know what AvePoint does, and hey, you know, you have a good relationship with those folks, you know, they're going to be easy to work with. They're going to become the default. We're going to become the default person that's recommended in those compete situations.
I was having that exact same conversation just before this, speaking with a partner of ours. And that's so true. You got to win the hearts and minds of the engineers for sure. As you were building the program, what kind of differences were you seeing country by country? And did you build that into the program?
Yes. So that's a great question. How do you get 5 different continents and 9 different sales regions all on the same page? Well, you have at first monthly meetings with all these folks, right? So what I would do is I had a call, and we work in Japan, Singapore, the United Kingdom, Germany, France, you know, Iberia region, peninsula. We have Canada, Latin America, United States. I'm sure I'm missing somebody. Australia, of course, too. So the first thing you got to do is build trust, because all of these sales regions have been running a business with the channel. It just hasn't been cohesive, right? So you have to meet these folks. You have to learn what they're doing today. You have to explain kind of what the greater vision is and assure them that they're going to have a voice in being able to shape what it looks like. And then you have to genuinely listen to their feedback and how they're doing business. And as you're putting together the framework of what it is you're hoping to achieve, you have to make sure that they're not just part of the meeting where you're launching it. They're every step of the way able to provide feedback and input. So you come to meet a middle ground with everybody. So I would have monthly calls for the 7 months or so that we actually built this program with every single region to talk through what their expectations were, to then take that month to iterate, show them again, hey, here's the next version of what we're putting together, then the next version. So that by the time we got to month 3 or 4, and we were 2 or 3 months out from launch, they were pretty comfortable with this idea that, hey, my business is going to be interrupted. I might have to change my rates or my terminology, but I have a lot of time for us to normalize that. All the contracts that I currently have today, oh, there's this thing called a click-through agreement in this new portal. That's going to supersede those, super easy for me to explain, right? So it's a lot of communication, a lot of trust building, but also a lot of listening and then genuinely showing that what you're producing takes into account their different disparate opinions.
As you're building that out, what types of things could you make uniform and consistent globally? And where did you have to have some flexibility to meet the needs of those sales leaders?
Yeah. So one of the things that we knew we had to get uniform was our margin, discount margin. The reason was because we actually had, and this has been, it's been an issue and it will be an issue for anybody that operates in a multi-geo fashion. You have a partner that operates in the UK and the United States. They're getting quotes from both. And eventually they start to realize these discounts don't match up. So what do? They focus on the region that's giving them the best deal. And then all of a sudden you'll see, you know, opportunities that are for the wrong region because they know that salesperson is going to give them the best quote. So that was something we had to adjust. That was a bit of a negotiation, right? Because we had to make sure we came together with a number that was competitive for the market, but also wouldn't cause a lot of downsell and churn because we do annual subscriptions. So if you then increase a partner's margin on a renewal, you are effectively downselling that customer. So you need to give enough leeway to come up with a plan. Based off of this normalization, what's our expected downsell and churn? And our expected churn, because some partners might say, I'm not working on this, I'm going to go to a different vendor, right? And how do we mitigate this? And then if a partner escalates, what in this new program, what level of control do I as a country leader to, frankly, create a bespoke plan for them, right? So we had to overcome that. And that was something that we did have to negotiate on. Something that we didn't negotiate on was our tiers for partners. So what we call the different bands of partners, right? So our author, we call authorized, managed, and invested. Those are our three partner tiers. No matter where you go in AppPoint, you're going to hear those three terms to designate a partner, right? Now, what we did negotiate on is what it takes for a partner to get into each band, a region may decide. So for my, or in the United States, how I get partners from authorized to managed to invested is going to be different than what you might experience in the UK. But as long as we know, right, you know, as long as you kind of document what those differences are, our executive team can go around the world and realize and ask the question, who are your invested partners? And they know I'm going to get a list of the best producing partners in this country, right, based off these kind of unique criteria. So,
yeah. And that's when I think you do have to flex on, because the market sizes are different, customer sizes are different. What's a good bar for a US partner could be just totally off the charts for a partner in another country. No, that makes a lot of sense. Any differences in your program in terms of market, target market, SMB versus enterprise, you know, market segments?
So the program itself doesn't cater to any particular, should say, correct word, segment. I was going to say demographic, but yeah, segment, a partner, right? It doesn't really cater to that, right? It's all kind of the same through. That's where we are allowing kind of those terms of authorized, managed, and investor for you to kind of divvy that up. Because really within that, you also have like your margin, but you also have your partner benefits. Certain benefits matter to an MSP that don't matter to a VAR, that don't matter to an SI. So you can kind of play with what you're giving inside those segments as well. So that's kind of how we adjust for those differences.
Yeah, that makes sense. So As you were getting started, sounds like you had some countries that already had a bit of a channel nature in them, right? And that's typical. The further you, I think you get from the headquarters, the more partnering you see. But how did you get the sellers who weren't used to working with partners? How did you start motivating them to start engaging?
Insert, bring in the choir, because I'm going to start preaching. Biggest thing is a thing called comp neutrality. So that was one of the big things that we had to establish. And that requires you, like, you got to go to the CFO. You got to go to accounting for all those folks, everything from your commission all the way up. They got to be on board. And this is why when we talk about channel transformation, it has to start at that executive leadership team or SLT, whatever you call them. They have to be on board because your direct sellers are coin operated by design. They're going to play to their comp plan. And their comp is typically based off of bookings. And if there's anything that's going to reduce the amount of bookings they get, they're not going to do it by design. So if you're going to say you're going to be channel, you have to introduce comp neutrality to make that work. The next thing is you have to ease the quoting process, right? Partners, if you're doing it right, are going to be transacting a lot, right? So you have to put in systems in place to do things like deal registration. Oh, I don't have to worry about just receiving emails left and right from different people. I know there's a system. The partners come in, they deal reg. The deal reg system, based off my region and based off of the criteria set, lets me know what tier they're at and lets me know what margin they get. So there's no negotiating, right? At least by default, as a direct seller, on what I'm going to maybe giving this partner as far as margin. A lot of the times, and this is, I think this is true in life, if you remove the illusion of choice from people, all of a sudden negotiating stops, right? It's the margin, right? As opposed to saying some we can give this or this, then you want to negotiate, but I digress. But having it documented and set makes the quoting process so much easier. Oh, I got a deal reg for $100,000 I didn't have this morning. I'm going to give them X percent because that's what the program says. And I don't want to offend the person, like the program, because maybe then the next deal reg, even though it's in my territory, if you don't want to work with partners, we're going to give it to somebody else because you caused an issue. And on that note, rules of engagement. So when those things come through, you're inevitably going to have folks that do not want to play ball, even if it's comp neutral, even if they know what the discount is. There's still going to be some type of conflict because you haven't thought of every single scenario yet. Splits is a big one that we commonly run into. So we have documented rules of engagement. And essentially what those are is all those one-off scenarios that we've encountered, we set a precedent that this is how we handle that, and we constantly republish it. And then we constantly reference it. I have a slide right now that we've updated, I think, like 2 or 3 times. But when there's an issue on a split, everybody just knows, copy and paste the slide. This is what the sales managers agreed to. We stop the arguing. So I think that you have to have a culture that's okay with abiding by things like rules of engagement as well. And once again, if there's any further conflict, my manager, all the way up to our executive vice president of sales, he's bought in. What do the rules of engagement say? I don't care. What do the rules of engagement say? We're going with that. If this is a unique scenario, he'll make a decision. That's law. And we keep doing our business from there.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where I think the program uniformity comes in. That's so important, right? That you now have a very consistent global program with consistent global discounts that you can point to. You got the rules of engagement. You got comp neutrality. Those are 3 really must-haves, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's some more niche things like non-standard pricing, right? So what happens when I have to discount? What does that do to the partner's margin, right? There's a scale that we have on the back end to adjust that back down, right? And the partners, it's not something that we necessarily publish, but we at least have a structure to handle it internally.
I'm going to have a guest coming up that I'll be interviewing in a short while. And you know how he handles that? No non-standard pricing.
No discounts.
No discounts. That's the program. That's it. There's no negotiation. And it's an interesting approach. And I want to dive into it because, you know.
Is he in software sales?
Yes.
Good for him. You're in software. You're not discounting. Good for you, bro. Good for you.
Yeah. You're wondering how in the heck can you do this? So I'm very curious to find out. You know, I'm sure listeners will be curious too to see how you play that.
Yeah. Good for him. I want to know. How do you make that happen? Like, we're in software.
Yeah. No, we haven't figured it out. That's for sure. But having consistent programs and rules of engagement definitely helps out a ton. All right. So you've got this thing running. You got all those things in place. Your leadership, I'm sure, is saying, Sam, is this working? What are we getting in return for comp neutrality and all these investments?
Oh, man.
Show me the money.
Right. So this is the good one. So the hard thing is despite making more and more revenue, It's when you are coming from a direct sales business, your CRM system is not probably designed to at scale account for partner source revenue. Then if you're working with a distributor and you're trying to see how many partners they're bringing in, you got to look at distribution source revenue. You can't just look at the total amount of money associated with a partner because they may just be on fulfillment business, right? Or resale business. You're talking about MSPs and they sell to a customer, right? And you have a renewals team. Does the renewals team go to that customer? How do you designate that? No, it's an MSP. The MSP is going to take care of the renewal. Okay, we have a team that's paid on renewals, right? So there's so many facets. We haven't even gotten to services, right? So we want to give services to partners. How do you make sure that the partner, the customer isn't already working with a different partner and how to make sure that's logged in the system? So it's hard and it takes time. But once again, you have to make sure we're 100% clear. We want to do this, right, folks? All right, let's figure out what our target's going to be based on the information we have today. So something that was very easy for us to track at the beginning was partner deal reg. Why? Because we established a system. It came into CRM. We had to link CRM to PRM. We have to designate where those opportunities come from. Great. First year, that's how we measure success. Not fulfillment, not it's either partner deal reg. That's what we're looking at. Right. We also were looking at business that was being processed via distribution, right? So we could see where that business was coming from. So we're gonna grade that. Now, the merging of these two concepts together is the challenge because we've been selling through distribution way longer than we had deal reg, right? So if you look at a distribution number, it would say X, but the deal reg number would say Y. You then had to combine them together to actually get the proper partner source number, right? And then that's just net new for the year. You then have to then renew all that the next year to get your total partner ARR. So without getting into all the particulars for those that are like, yeah, it seems like a lot. Step number one, what can you measure today? What numbers do you even have today? Number two, can we agree that those numbers matter as an executive team? Great. What's our target? If you can, try to figure out what you did last year with those numbers to get like a growth rate, but let's have a number that we think is going to be good if we can get there, right? And what you're going to do is you're going to try to operate for a full sales cycle year and hang on and just focus on that number, knowing everything else that comes around it that seems confusing, you don't quite understand. You're going to figure it out probably in Q4 of that next year. Find that first number. And then as that year starts to end, you start to think, well, actually, we want to look at the business in this way, bolt it on. And then maybe you have two numbers that you're looking at, right? So maybe you start off with deal reg. Then you start off with deal reg plus distribution. Maybe your third year, you're looking at the total annual recurring revenue that's been sourced based on those first two numbers. And then slowly build from there. But it really comes down to finding that first piece, agreeing that we care, and focusing for a solid 12 months to track it and resisting the urge to change the target based on these one-off scenarios throughout the year.
Yeah, and I love what you said. You know, get that executive buy-in and agreement that, yeah, this is the metric that matters. This is the target. We all agree. And that agreement, I think what you're saying there is whether we're hitting that number or not out of the gate, we've got to stay committed. We're not pulling back because things aren't looking quite right this month, right? That's an opportunity to maybe tweak how we're doing things, but you've got to stay committed.
Yeah. And what'll often happen is, you know, you're going to realize, so I use the example of distribution source versus like deal reg. If you pick one of those numbers, what you're going to realize is that, well, that's not the whole story. I got to change this dashboard to actually get the, and what you end up doing is your senior leadership team and your CFO, every time you try to present to them, they're going to be like, but I thought you said we were focused on this number. Why am I seeing this asterisk over here and like this number? And then you got to re-explain yourself. Because you're not seeing the full picture. Don't worry about the full picture. What do we agree to in January? We're going to focus on that until December.
So for 24, you know, we're all planning for the next year. Is there a new metric that you're adding that you want to track towards and goal on?
Yes. So speaking from the experience of doing this for the past 2 years, the terms I'm using are all the terms that we've used internally, right? The challenges that we've had. So next year, we've finally gotten sophisticated enough to truly track the annual recurring revenue that was sourced by partners every year, regardless of the mechanism in which they purchased, because partners can buy direct from AdPoint. They can buy from like six different distributors. They can buy via, right? There's a bunch of different ways for them to buy. That's what hemmed us up for a while. But now that we have a good way of tracking all those different metrics, we now have a good umbrella number to say, all right, this is the amount of net new value that's added every year. And this is the amount of value that a partner is also protecting and recurring, right? That's your annual recurring value total. And now we're sophisticated enough that we can actually base our team's comp plans off of those numbers too. So that's another big thing is, right, like that's another reason why you don't really want to change those numbers mid-year, because typically at the beginning, you're putting a comp plan together off numbers. And when you start obfuscating things, it gets confusing. So yeah, what we look at is the total amount of revenue that our partners protect. And then, of course, we also look at what's been net new in a given year to kind of have our growth targets based off that.
Interesting. That's really cool. The comp plans, there's a lot of comp planning going on right now, right? So when you said that's what you could comp on next year, is that the sellers or the partner team or both?
So the partner team, so that's why we kind of split it up too. So our managed service provider team is comped on selling licenses to our managed service providers directly. Right? Or partners that they manage, right? Buying more licenses in some way, shape, or form, right? It's our MSP partner team functions very akin to a direct sales team, but our customer is just the partner, right? That's the idea. We then have that VAR SI team. They focus like an overlay because their job is to work with the VAR SIs who are not going to, the difference with the MSPs, MSPs will productize your solution and then sell at scale. It's predictable, all right? That's the reason we like that model. VAR SI is very opportunistic. They're going to show up maybe two or three times a year, then go dark on you, right? So we have this separate team, and what they're focused on is just purely partner source revenue from their book of business and their partners. And really, their job is to eliminate the internal challenges of navigating the internal mechanisms of like working through the deal reg process, working with a particular SE, making sure the contracts for that particular customer work, right? So that's why they operate as an overlay. And as opposed to like how much they're selling to that partner, they're just paid off of all the source revenue that that partner was associated with, right? So they're not really involved in a sales motion. It's more of like the internal enablements of the partner and all that stuff.
Is there a standard or traditional services channel for you as well? Not managed services, but just more professional service delivery by partners?
Yeah. So we do have partners. We would call those partners more on the SI view, partners that are purely just looking at services as revenue. The reality of it is most of these MSPs, VARs, and SIs often have a combination of two or all three personas in any given company. One typically is the dominant way that they make money, right? So yeah, we actually have a program. It's called CAPS, Certified AppLink Professional Services, where they get certified with our technology, and that gives those service-oriented partners an opportunity to get subcontractor opportunities from AppPoint. And then it also allows us to have confidence to be able to give out certain lines of our service catalog and have it delivered by partners. So we have what's called an essentials deployment where, you know, they're typically more on the entry level solutions. They have, it's a pretty cookie cutter service that we offer. And now we've gotten sophisticated enough that we can actually get those as they come in from our team. We actually give those out to partners as a benefit. And we have a pretty high margin that that partner takes as far as revenue share too. So
are you subbing that, Sam, out to the partner so that your seller sells it, then you sub it to the partner who goes and executes on it?
That's correct. Yeah.
We just launched that kind of program. We're just getting started on it.
Yeah. Grab it. Because most, if you're not a software company, you're typically paid off of, you know, you're in our world, you're typically paid off your services revenue. So even if the dollar amount for the service doesn't meet your rate card, what you get is consistent utilization of your engineers that they have like a down couple of weeks for like, hey, here's a quick 10-hour project. Go knock that out so I can increase your have your utilization normalized.
I like it because it's a way for the seller to introduce the partner, that SI, into the account. And they're the ones who are going to be in there long term, really making sure there's long-term success and making sure your product's sticky in that account.
Yeah, and that's one thing we were always clear with our partners too, is you represent yourself with this customer. Consider this customer your customer to upsell your own solutions and services as you see it, because the customer probably came to us with a myopic view of what they need to accomplish, right? By virtue of you building that longer relationship, you're going to find additional opportunity, hopefully for our software, but even if it's just for your own, we'd rather have you in there as their trusted advisor. That way, in a year, 6 months, 3 months later, when something does pop up that's relevant to AppPoint, you can point it back to us, which is also the reason why we're now going to be requiring that partners get certified with our technology prior to taking on those services so that they have the knowledge to identify those opportunities.
You came out of the enablement world. That's kind of how you started in the channel. Share what you're doing. You share this on the advisory board. And I thought it was really cool how you're comparing partner engagement and enablement and kind of demonstrating the impact that's having on your business.
Yeah. So what we look at is partner production. So that's one of the, you know, sub-metrics that we have available. So we look at the total number. Look at it in two different ways. Look at the total number of partners in our system, what their average sale is. And then I look at the total number of average of actual currents or partners that actually have an existing contract open with us and look at what their average sale is. That's how we get your partner production on the latter side, right? I then look at, cool, thanks to our PRM system, right? I'll give them a shout out, partner, great folks, love those cool folks over at Impartner. When they complete their certifications via Impartner, we actually have that synced back to the user's account in Dynamics CRM. And then I can roll that up to their partner account. So now I can see what their average spend is for all of my partners that have outwind contracts, and I can see whether or not they've had certifications. So what I can do is compare. Show me the average spend of all my partners, and now show me only the average spend of partners that have a certification completed, any certification completed, because that's how you prove your ROI in a certification program. It's one metric, right? But you can clearly see, and for us, it's crazy. It's like 2x. Partners that complete certifications make like 2 times more money. So that's really what we see in the next question there. Well, how many certifications have they completed? We can see that too. Spoiler, the more certifications they complete, the more money they tend to bring in. So that's how we compare ROI on that.
Yeah, I loved what you're doing there. And listeners, really pay attention to that. If you can execute on that, that's a huge amount of data, I think, for you and for your CFO to understand and the folks that are investing in certifications. We get that question a lot. You know, what's the impact of these certifications on our partners? And I think that sales element is really important. What I would love to do, we're just now starting to measure the NPS of our delivery partners. If I could tie the NPS to certifications.
Yeah. So that's something that's part of our CAPS program too, is actually polling the customers after the partners have completed it. They haven't rolled it out just yet, but that's another factor that we're looking into to make sure that the partners that are doing the deliveries, right, are doing a good high quality job.
Yeah. No, it's so important. That's awesome. So got a few minutes left here, Sam. What haven't I asked you about things that you're doing? You're doing a lot of really cool stuff over there.
Yeah. So marketing. That's weird. We haven't talked about marketing yet.
Marketing. But have we got another hour?
Right, exactly. MDF. How do you spell it? I think that the last thing I'll say is that, you know, on the marketing side, there are so many publications and groups out there with these beautiful prospectuses, prospecti, if that's the plural for that word.
Prospecti.
Prospecti. We had this year, you know, now that we're really once again getting into them, we've gone to all of them, right? We've gone to all the major players out there. We really had to sit down this year and think like, okay, right? Budgets aren't complete yet, but assuming we have the same amount of money to spend going into next year, let's play around with this. And we really had to, we broke our events that we go to in the channel into, and I'm talking about trade shows when I say events, right? Just to clarify, trade shows and distie shows, into 3 different categories. Where do we want to go deep? Where do we want to go wide? And where do we want to see how we can scope this event for next year? Because, you know, when you're looking at everything and looking at just notes in an Excel sheet of, yeah, we should go back, no, we shouldn't, you start just kind of making decisions linearly. And by the time you get halfway through your budget, it's gone. And you haven't even got to the potentially good stuff. So in order to make that decision, number one, we actually went through a systematic process of pulling all the prospecti together, right? And making requests that we didn't have them. Taking a look at the previous actual historicals of our campaign members, meaning who do we scan at the booth? Who do we follow up at the booth? We take that into account. We also take into account the number of people total that we're going to be attending the event, right? So we'll have 3 important numbers to grade the events as we look out in the future. Number one, if I know the total amount of people who were supposed to be at the event last year and how much I spent, I can calculate my average cost per impression. Last year, if we attended the event, I know how many people I scanned or talked to. We call those campaign members. I can calculate that against the cost of the event and get my average cost per campaign member. So I have 2 numbers to compare. And then third, for the next upcoming year with those prospectuses, prospecti, right, I know what the investment's going to be next time. So I know how much I spent, what the average cost was, comparing it against impressions and campaign members, and comparing that next year so we can figure out, all right, based off of this performance, these numbers, instead of having 10 different places we're going to go to, right, and spend a lot of money, I'd rather triple down on 4 and go deep this way, right? Some of these publications just happen to have events where we have home offices, local, super easy. We're going to go wide there. I'm not going to spend a lot there, but I'm going to go to more events with one publication. And then there's constantly the emails. Come check us out. Come do that. Come see there. That's my scoping bucket. So here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to, not to say spend the least, but I'm going to be economical with my purchases just to make sure I can attend and kind of scope out for next year, whether or not we should go. So that's just kind of like general marketing strategy, I guess. But for the channel, because you have the added publication piece, it is kind of unique to us.
No, I think that's great advice, Sam. And if people haven't noticed, your engineering background and analytical mindset shines through, which is really helpful because a lot of times you get all these requests, hey, come do this event, do that, and you just throw money at it without paying attention to the important statistics and things like you said. Those are pretty easy things to measure, right? Just pay attention to it.
And once again, it takes time to get sophisticated. And even when it comes to things that are not trade shows, but they might be like partner sales kickoffs, partner events, look at your partner's ARR, or however you're measuring them, and divide that by what their ask is, that $5,000 or $10,000 they want every year. Does it make sense for us to sponsor their sales kickoff, right? They're asking for $35,000, but they've only done $40,000. Like, do the math.
Simple math.
Simple math. Just do it.
Channel Math for Dummies.
Yes. That's a book. That's a book title.
You work on that one, Sam.
Yeah. I'll take that one. I'll give you royalties. 5%. Easy.
Done. There we go. You guys heard it here. I got 5% royalties. All right. Sam is rocking an AvePoint Christmas sweater. We're going to have to get a picture of that to put on the promo.
Holiday season. Not a problem.
That is looking nice. Looking nice. Sam, thank you so much for sharing. Am I going to see you at PartnerCon?
I'm going to have a baby January 3rd.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Your hands are going to be full.
Quite literally. So it's number two for me. So I got that. I'm actually not even going to make RSKO in January either. So maybe next time, bud.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Now you're going to need a baby AvePoint sweater.
Yes. My wife works for Microsoft and they gave her like this full kit just for babies. Like there's a team at Microsoft that like tracks, you know, due dates and sends out kits for babies one day.
A Microsoft onesie?
Yes. She got a Microsoft, yes, with a little beanie cap.
That's great. Love it. Put that on the store. All right, Sam, congratulations. Happy New Year to you. Thanks again. Loved it.
You as well, Rob. Appreciate it.
All right. See ya.
Thanks for listening to Channel Journeys. For show notes and other Channel Journey podcasts, visit channeljourneys.com. If you liked today's show, please forward it to your channel friends and be sure to tune in for Rob's next channel adventure.
All right, guys, great tips from Sam that you can use to increase partner sales, along with new ways to measure the return on investment. Sam's work demonstrates how the right blend of technology, enablement, strategic marketing, and comp plan alignment can really propel your channel strategy. Thanks, Sam, for sharing the secret sauce to your success. Thank you for listening. For all of today's show notes and links, go to channeljourneys.com/CJ137. You can subscribe to Channel Journeys while you're there so you don't miss an episode. Be sure to check out our sponsor, Impartner, at impartner.com. Next episode, I've got a great podcast where I interview another channel podcaster. He shares his thoughts on harnessing the power of partnerships and elevating customer value through collaboration so that 1+1 can equal 3. Until then, have an awesome channel journey.